So I'm going to dive in since the first bits are sort of boilerplate. So an IP note, these calls are open to the public, but please join the group so that you have dotted the I's and crossed the T's on the IP-related issues. If you have not formally joined the group, then please refrain from substantive technical contributions. We do use IRC to queue. You can use a queue plus. Also, when you sign up or when you log in, when you get in, you don't really log in, please use present plus, which will get you correctly in the minutes so that we know you're there. So who wants to scribe this week? I'm going to open up our beautiful scribe list and start working through it. If there's anyone on the call who feels inspired to serve the community by writing down what people sign up.
I can do some scribing today since I love taking notes. Oh, that's sorry. That's an IIW joke.
Right, exactly. Thanks, Heather. And let me just record your assistance in our scribe list. Okay, and how are we doing with connections? Kim or Manu, can you guys look at that?
Go ahead. Just
as a 425.
Yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I've all but given up on associating numbers, and if people just don't press and plus themselves, then they don't show up in the minutes. So, you know, configure your dial-in thing or press and plus yourself, and if you don't do that, you just don't show up.
Yeah, well, my dial-in, I think, doesn't show me unless it does. I don't think I'm on the list. Yeah, I don't know how, because I call in via Skype to the line because my SIP client on Windows doesn't work. It stopped working.
You might be 425 then. Well, actually, no, you could be any one of the unknowns.
Yeah, it's frustrating. Normally, I try and pay attention, so I can, I'm in IRC and I can hear the bleep and I say, oh, that's me. But, if you aren't on the button for that,
you're probably 67. You've been, that line has been making noise for the last 12 seconds.
Ah, okay, good. Okay, so we'll follow Manu's lead with that. If you can line your numbers up with your name, that would be useful. At a minimum, please type a present plus in the IRC. And that will get you into the minutes appropriately. And with that, we'll move on. So our agenda today, as usual, we'll kick off with introductions and reintroductions. We'll touch on some announcements, then briefly action items and work items. And basically, we split up the payload of the call between a report out from TPAC, which is 2 weeks ago now, but we haven't had a call since then, IAW, which is at the same time frame, and then there was some. To me, it was a little bit surprising how many folks struggle to understand or see the unique selling proposition of bids. Not that they weren't amazing, but that our communications about them don't seem to nail what's different about this, despite the work that we've done on the DID primer and the DID spec, and you know all the different socialization efforts we've done. So we wanted to spend some time in light of the conversations at TPAC and IAW, just to see if we could surface something like a unique selling proposition So as we move forward, we understand that better and can use it. So that's the planned agenda. Does anyone have anything else they want to add? Okay, so let me start with introductions. Is there anyone new on the call who hasn't been with us before? Looking through the IRC list, some of these people I may not know. David Diaz, I don't know if I know you. I don't know Gargaron. If any one of you are new, we would love to have you just give a quick introduction.
What about Michaela? I know Michaela might not be new, but...
That's me. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I managed to get... I just went to see what's going on these. I work for Onfido. We are an identity verification provider. So we are interesting to, you know, we start to look into distributed identity and see also how we can play a role as an issuer of claims and within this ecosystem.
Very cool. Thank you for joining
us. I'm not a developer, so I'm more on the product side. So, yeah, so bear with me.
Great. Well, you know, we need all sides of the tech stack, including those who face the customer. So it's appreciated having you here. Okay. How about a reintroduction? Who hasn't introduced themselves lately? Manu, when was the last time you introduced yourself?
A while ago.
Who needs no introduction.
A while ago. Hi, my name's Manu Sporny. I am the CEO of a company called DigitalBazaar. We have spent a lot of time over the past 15 years, really more with World Wide Web Consortium over the last decade, trying to push forward verifiable credentials, decentralized identifiers, and things of that nature. So we're one of the companies that is implementing a lot of the stuff that we talk about on these calls.
Cool. Thanks, Manu. Okay, next up, announcements and reminders. So we know of two events we want to draw your attention to. One is the W3C workshop on strong authentication and identity. And let me grab that URL, put it in the chat. This is going to be December 10th and 11th in Seattle, Redmond, more properly on the Microsoft campus. If you want to attend, please go check out the page. You'll be asked to fill out a form and write a little position paper. Manu, do you know how the pickup on that's going?
Not enough people have submitted their position papers. We need to know because it's in like a month. So if you're going to go get your position paper in this week, sorry, your position statement, which is like two paragraphs. Let me see if I can try and get a link to that workshop. Also, whoever just dialed in, we're getting lots of noise from your line, so please mute. Thank you.
Okay, cool. So thanks for that status. If you can drop the URL in, I'm sure that would be useful. So for those of you who intend to go, including myself, I filled out the form, but it wasn't clear how to submit the position statement, so I got to do that this week. So please step up and do that so you can participate. Because we'd love to have you. If you're on this call, we would love to have you there.
Are there examples of position papers just to give some clarity on what's intended for those two paragraphs?
No. unfortunately, no. Here is a link to the position statement thing. You submit it to this email address there, group identity WSPC, so that goes directly there. It says what a good position statement should be, so your background, links to supporting resources, what you think the workshop should cover, technical issues you'd like to focus on, that sort of stuff. So again, it's not a, you know, you don't have to write a lot. It's just your background and what you'd like to focus on at the workshop.
Okay, I do think we have a couple of folks on queue. Andrew?
Thanks, Joe. So just to be clear, I filled out the form with details of myself, and I hope I put sufficient reason to invite me to the thing, but do you really need a position statement from everybody? I know you need a good bulk of them, but is it mandatory?
So if you want to make, if it's oversubscribed, we will have to cut people. We are expecting a huge rush of people at the very end. So people that have position statements will not be dropped. People that do have position statements will not be dropped. People that don't will be dropped instantaneously, right? Because we don't know why they're coming unless one of us, you know, knows that they need to be there. So if you're, you know, if you're applying, just take the time to write a two-paragraph position statement. That'd be the best thing to make sure that you're in the running.
Yeah. So basically, I'm just going to copy the text that I put into my form and submit it as a position statement, because that's
as long as it's taking a position, that's perfectly fine.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Next in the queue is Heather.
Yeah, I guess I had a similar question. I filled out the form, and I thought that I was going to be contacted. I thought after you fill out the form, then there would be some kind of response. And I hadn't heard that, so I didn't know, like, what the process is. It wasn't clear from the information.
Yeah, we're struggling with that. There are important dates in the top right. So that link that I just put in there, position statements, there in the top right, you know, there's a position statement deadline, which has already been passed. November 12th, we'll be sending out acceptance notifications. And then the 21st is the program. We're trying to announce the program before that. But again, I mean, this is... things are moving more slowly than we'd like to like it to be with the workshop. So let me ask a question. That link that I just put in IRC at the top right, it says important dates. Does that give you an understanding of at least when things are going to be happening?
Yeah, but also I thought when I filled out the form that it was like in lieu of a position statement.
Yeah.
There was like
it in fact says as an alternative to the form, you are encouraged to submit a presentation to Alex.
Yeah, and we're trying to get that updated, but because it's, you know, a committee that's putting this together, it's taking a while to get agreement to update that. But I will absolutely provide feedback from all of you saying that it is a very confusing process. And at least we're aware that it's confusing people, and we will try to update that text. And honestly, if you can put in a PR to change it, that, you know, I'm pretty sure our next meeting we can just say we need to pull this PR in.
I mean, I just will say it didn't, the way I completed it, it was like, oh, you do this and you don't have to do a position statement, because I didn't have any idea that, like, that it wasn't clear in the content, you know, the copy on that yes, you need to submit a submission statement, a position statement. So it was like an either or. That's the way I read the copy. So if the intention was something different, then that was miscommunicated.
So the intent was you just need to apply. But if there are more people that apply, then we only have space for 70 people. And if there are 90 people that apply, we need some kind of culling metric, and position papers were going to be that. So if you really want to make sure that you're in the running, submit a position paper. Or you could just kind of assume that they're not going to be more than 70 people, and you'll get an invitation anyway, right? So all I'm saying is I know the people on this call. Care about this area and would probably not be happy to know that they've been culled because they didn't put in a position paper, right? So it's just one of the ranking criteria that we're using to cull people if we need to. So for example, you know, I don't think we need like 15 people to show up from one company. And as a result, you know, if 15 people apply from a single company, we'll probably basically be like, can you just bring 3 instead of 15? Anyway, so I'm hoping that clarifies things. Like, if you want to make sure that you have a very strong chance of attending the workshop, please submit a position paper along with your application form, and we will update the text to reflect that as soon as we have our next kind of program committee meeting. Hopefully that helps.
Thanks, Manu. Heather, I had exactly the same response, so thanks for bringing that up. Okay, the second announcement for folks to save the date, the next Rebooting Web of Trust, which is actually 8, not 7, as I incorrectly put in the agenda, is February 27th, 28th, and March 1st, location TBD. We are considering spots in Europe, and I think there's a long shot, maybe South Africa, but location is TBD. We want to resolve that real soon now, but it's not resolved yet. So please do save the dates if you want to join us. Are there any other announcements that folks know of events in the next 6 months or so that we should put on here? If not, we'll move on. Oh, go ahead, Heather.
You might be muted, Heather.
Heather.
Oh, sorry, I forgot to unmute myself. So I don't know how far in the future you want to look out, but I know IIW put their dates. I don't know what they are. I could probably find them and put them in the link, but they actually have their dates through 2019, I think. Well, I'm looking them up right now. IIW, whatever the next one is April 30th to May 2nd.
Okay, excellent. We will add that and make it a regular part of our announcements.
I'll put it in the notes.
Cool, thanks. Okay, with that, let's not seeing anyone else on the queue. Let's talk about current action items. I know we've had quite a bit of progress on some of these. I have not yet created a mirror as a repo. Jump into the queue if you're working on one of these and would like to give us an update. We got the Varus 1 did method spec is still outstanding, the RSA signature suite. The spec text training, I think, is done. Kim, can we actually close that issue?
Yes, we can.
Excellent. And there's a link to the video, so sweet. So I'm going to close
record
that.
Record speed for closing an issue. The wrong record, but still record speed.
Well, that was great. I mean, we closed one. I'll take that.
Just as a follow-up to that, W3C, there are a number of W3C companies that noted that they were really thankful for the video. So they were really happy that we did that. And W3C staff also said that they're going to try and circulate it. So, you know, that's great. I mean, you know, even though it took a while to get done, there are a number of companies that are like, great, we're circulating this inside our company so that people know how to kind of work with CGs. So thank you for everyone that put in the effort.
Yeah, Bodan specifically, because he did the cut down. I did the easy part, learning how to do it. He did the video editing, so very much thanks to him that it was actually completed.
Very cool. Well, glad to see that get picked up, and thanks to everyone who contributed. I'm not seeing any other actions. Manny, where are you guys with the did method spec?
No progress. It's everything else is eating up our time, unfortunately.
Okay, that's
implementations are actually moving forward fairly well, so that's progressing, and honestly, there really isn't all that much that's going to change between now and production.
Okay, cool. Well, just want to touch base on it. So let's look at our work items then, which is a slightly different subset of what we're trying to get done together. We got the DID spec, the DID use cases. So I'm going to talk a little bit about DID use cases. Let me just touch on that now, actually. Just before TPAC, I did introduce a graphical representation of the use cases that everyone had submitted and that we talked about on this call. That was fairly rough, and that a lot of language wasn't synchronized. You know, we didn't do a lot of editing to sort of pull that together, but it was a good start. We need to get that to another level of sophistication, including incorporating some of the feedback from TPAC and IAW about people who are like, I need to see use cases that do X, Y, Z because, you know, this doesn't help me. And interestingly, we had folks who said, look, you need to start with a privacy-based use case, and you need to also do one that's not about privacy. So it was interesting that we had folks on both sides of that divide. So our conversation today, we'll talk a little bit about that. So that's where we are with the DID use cases. Does anyone else have a work item to give an update about? Lionel. Let's hear from Lionel.
I would like to move forward with the data minimization, and you talked about it having a kind of status I wasn't 100% clear on. So if you can clarify what the next actions are, I can keep it moving towards report status.
Great. Christopher, you may correct me here, but I think the next step is to take the document that was published by Rebooting Web of Trust and get it into spec text. Is that the right next step?
Yes.
Okay, so Lionel, we've got a great video, in case you didn't make the live training, on how to work with spec text. And so that would be the right next step. And if you need help, by all means, holler. Reach out to one of the chairs, and we can give you some help.
Okay, terrific. Does Shannon help with stuff like that, or just chairs?
Yeah, not Shannon, because this isn't a Rebooting Web of Trust publication issue now. Now it's getting it into the repo, into a repo in CCG, and we use a shim of technology called SpecText, which is what that previous action item report was about.
Okay, I'll get on it and report progress next time with you.
Okay, great. Manu?
Yeah, just wanted to note that I just found out at TPAC that Sandro Hawk, who used to work for W3C, has a tool that will convert Google Doc to Respec automatically.
Sweet!
He said that it's super buggy and he wrote it over the weekend. That may enable us to get more people contributing spec text. So let's try and ask Sandro to use that tool. So if Lionel doesn't is okay with being the canary in the coal mine there, we can have him use that tool to convert it and see if it works out well. And if it does, that's great. That means that hopefully we have more editors as a result. The other thing that I wanted to mention was another work item that actually also has to do with Sandro. So Sandro has been working hard with the Credible Web Community Group on combating what used to be called fake news, mechanisms to know whether or not to trust something that you're reading, or at least see signals that give you an idea about the article that you're reading. like whether or not it's been published by a professional journalistic source, whether or not someone's reviewed the spec text, whether or not someone's asserted certain claims about it. And they're looking at potentially using verifiable credentials and some of the other stuff that this group is working on to make progress on their work. So I thought it would be good for this group to kind of invite them in and see what Sandra's been up to. There are two very good documents with respect to kind of reputation style things that I know we've been working on a lot at Rebooting and in this community that would benefit from all the really good work that Sandra's been doing. So just putting it on the group's radar.
Okay, great. I don't know that we have a topic for next Tuesday, but chairs, let's take this to email and see if we want to reach out to Sandra sooner rather than later. But thank you, Manu, for suggesting that. And I'm seeing Sam on the queue.
Yeah, I just wanted to reply to that on that topic and thread. My topic paper for Rebooting Web of Trust was about curation markets, but ultimately tracking attribution. And Manu and I had spoken a little bit about possibly using like all of our IRC history as a way to find different weights for attribution for people just being present or people scribing and being able to signal like a proof of stake in certain subjects or areas. And this is something I'm finding that is becoming really important. I'm feeling very not welcomed by some of the people. I'm sort of forced myself into this VR and privacy summit because I've been working with these same people for 4 years. And so it's, I think it would be really helpful because I sent them papers I'd written and things like that, but to be able to lay claim and stake into certain topics beyond just institutions. Especially for journalism and news and things like social media where everybody sort of becomes a journalist. And so I talked with at IIIW as well. Mylin put me in touch with the head of data. I can't remember his exact title, but he's at Cisco and he's running a new thing at the IEEE. And he's really trying to get data stores from different databases from different institutions to write an API that talks to each other and be able to sort of share the same kind of overlays for search. So I feel like this is connected, and I would love to help in some way, but I think that there's ways that maybe we could start to test things ourselves on our own group in terms of like being able to issue a credential of like, we're a part of this group and community. And not only that, like we're active members, like we scribe or we make videos or whatever. Like we can show a test to how active in a community we are ourselves and use that as a model for people to take out into other things. Because I hear murmurings of like liquid democracy and tokenized IT, and I think it's all kind of the same idea. That's just my thoughts.
Cool. Thanks, Sam. okay, sorry, I'm laughing at my own humor because I'd rather eat the pudding that has the proof in it rather than the dog food, but I don't know how to say that in a reasonable way because chocolate pudding eating our work doesn't really work. Okay, so that's great. So we'll try and get Sandra in here. Looks like we have some support for that, which would be great, Sam. So that brings us to the TPAC report out. So be ready to jump on the queue if you have something to add. I know I want to hear from both Manu and Christopher. It was a very interesting week. Lots of mental energy. Not as much late night partying or talking, I think, as at Rebooting. Is that true? I don't know if that was true. Maybe it was just me. Yeah, thank you. It was dad humor. Thank you, Andrew. Since I'm not seeing folks jump on the queue, Manu, how did you think it went?
Really great. I mean, so we had, I think, around what was it, 52 to 55 people at the DID breakout session, which was great. Kim did the DID working group proposal introduction, like an awesome pitch perfect introduction to DIDs in front of basically the entire advisory committee. So I think that there were 200 plus people in that room out of the 480 companies. So that was great, very well received. We had buttons, which was awesome, that we were wearing throughout the week that said, you know, ask us about DIDs. We specifically asked for any objections, and there was just one from a fairly small organization. And the objection wasn't, I don't want you to do DIDs. It was, I want you to do more than just DIDs. And that was, you know, with a lot of very large organizations in the room. We haven't seen any other objections behind the scenes at this point. So, I mean, just really strong support, right? I don't think that there's been a single WG proposal that I've seen that has had that amount of, you know, strong support and circulation before we actually did the vote. So it would be... I would be incredibly surprised if a DID working group didn't happen at this point. There is still more work that we need to do. So next month in December, we're meeting in Redmond at Microsoft HQ to talk about strong authentication and identity at the workshop. If you can make it and you like DIDs and the work that this group is doing, please show up, because if there's not enough representation from this community, the conversation can shift pretty dramatically. So make sure to come to the next workshop. But yeah, TPAC was really good in the grand scheme of things. Sorry.
Could you comment real quickly on the both the support and the sort of the breakthrough and the technical decision with the WebAuthn and how they might be able to support DIDs?
Ah, yes. So before going into TPAC, we had run an experiment where we used these authenticator devices that like Yubico and Fetien and folks are trying to get out into the market. So these are hardware cryptographic keys embedded in hardware that are affordable that can be used through the browser to do digital signatures. And we had extended them to support decentralized identifiers and verifiable credentials. And we just dropped into that working group and we just needed one feature for them to enable one feature for us to be able to use DIDs through the browser. And they at the end, you know, we made a case for it. And as a part of that working group, one of the working group decisions was to enable that support, right? So we don't know when it's going to be implemented and out there, but they felt like DIDs were important enough where they wanted to support that use case. So that was huge because that was something that we thought would take at least another 2 years to get in there, and it would be a hard fight, but very much the opposite. The other thing that the Web Authentication Group said was that they were very interested in doing something with DID authentication, and that might be something that they end up doing in their next charter. So again, you know, demonstrating, you know, that demonstrates traction, fairly substantial traction, because the companies in that group are, you know, Yubico and Microsoft and Google and, you know, all the people that really make deploying this stuff a reality. So again, you know, really good news on that front as well.
Cool. Thanks,
Ken. This is Ken.
Yeah, go ahead, Ken.
In the following meeting after TPAC, they're already expressing interest in finding out what exact use cases might be so that we could support that and move that forward.
Cool. Thanks, Ken.
That's
Daniel.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just figured I could probably add a little bit of detail to that. I mean, as you know, there's been a little bit of a journey in terms of evolving some people's thoughts in our organization. And I think, you know, the emerging thing coming out of that is, like, you know, we know the steps can happen, or the group that's working on it needs it. The talk that I've seen is like, look, if we're going to do it, we might as well make sure that it can be used in those other areas, you know, like WebAuthn and FIDO and things like that, so that we don't force groups to go make completely new things that are basically those things. So I think that that's kind of how they're coming around. That might be why there was like that change in tone of like more like acceptance from some folks. Does that make sense?
Cool. Thanks, Daniel. Yeah, I've been trying to dig up on Twitter, you know, those tweets that go through the river right by you. Apparently someone gave a shout-out from Kim Cameron saying that what's next for FIDO is to support DIDS in some way. I was like, oh, that's very cool. So I wish I had a URL for you, but it's great to see that kind of support rallying around. This felt like a big turning point. For me, at least, being out there.
Hey, Joe.
Okay. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
And then we'll go to Ryan.
Yeah, I can't be on the queue because I'm only on a mobile phone. I'm just about to go through mobile security. But I just want to say to the folks that were at TPAC, that was the most unexpected news. I expected good support for DIDS, but when I heard that about WebAuthn and I was truly stunned. So congratulations. I think a good amount of that goes to Daniel for the progress he's made within a certain company. So anyway, good job, guys.
Yeah. Well, also to your work, Drummond. I mean, people like it because it solves a problem well.
I have to say, for even though we didn't have the same kind of thing at IAW, it was, it was just DIDS were a done deal at IAW. Everything was based on, not everything, but there was just a lot of stuff that was shown there. And when we got the news, which was halfway through, I had talked to Anil John on the Wednesday, and he had just gotten the news from Manu about the attendance of the meetings, and we passed it on IAW, and people were thrilled. So super excellent. I got to drop off for a minute to go through security, so I'll try and rejoin.
Okay. Thanks, Roman. Okay. Let me close the queue on that one. That was TPAC. So, Ryan, go ahead.
Yeah. You mentioned something related to FIDO. My understanding of FIDO is that the tokens sign a secret that the website can understand. How could this be changed to help interoperate with this?
I don't know. I don't have an answer. If someone wants to jump on the queue real quick, I'll entertain it. And Kim, we'll give you the co-chair's prerogative. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, so actually, I think Dave is answering that, so I'd rather let him go first. I'll yield to him.
Right.
Okay.
Sure. So we did a demo at TPAC showing how WebAuthn works with DIDAuth, and it works in conjunction with the credential handler. So if you're providing a digital wallet that uses DIDs, that website, a relying party website, can request a credential, which might just be they're interested in just getting your DID, for example. They can request a credential. It goes through the credential handler to your digital wallet website, and the secret, which might include token binding from the relying party website that gets signed, is signed at the digital wallet website using a private key from the DID or associated with the DID. And then the piece of information that gets signed using the key that's on the authenticator, the hardware secured device, and that challenge is then sent back in the verifiable presentation to the relying party. So by using the web credential handler and WebAuthn, the challenge can flow through your digital wallet back to the relying party website. Does that answer your question?
What I heard you say is that it's back-end support for finding the key that is being tested. Is that correct?
Finding the key that's being tested, that's entirely up to the wallet to make that decision. I don't understand your question.
It sounds like you presented an off case, and at some point the FIDO token was able to successfully respond to the challenge. But it sounds like all the changes were not in the FIDO token. They were on the protocol handling to decide what to send to the FIDO token.
Right. So the FIDO relationship is effectively between the wallet website and the FIDO device. So what the abstraction that's happening here is the relying party only cares about getting the bid. And so it doesn't care which key is being used. The key that's being used will be determined by the relationship between the device, which is registered with the wallet, and the wallet website. And so we've pushed that relationship to enable relying parties to only care about the DID rather than care about the keys that are being used, because the DID gives them a stable identifier. And so then you can go out and rotate the keys, and that's a relationship you have doing key management with your wallet. Does that answer your question?
That answers my question. Thank you.
Sure.
Cool. Thanks to you both. Okay, and it looks like the queue just cleared up as that got cleared up. Great, because I want to jump over to IAW. So I know a good chunk of us on this call were busy in France at TPAC and didn't make it to IAW. So there's someone here who was at IAW. I don't know if Drummond's made it back on the call.
Wait, I thought Kim was on there to add one more thing about TPAC that was important.
Yeah. Going to write it, but I'd rather just say it here. So one of the big things we talked about, TPAC, of course, as you know, is JOTS versus JSON-LB, and not even versus, but, you know, the relationship, which one should we support, JSON-LB sort of, I guess, perceived shortcomings. And one of the categories of that was around sort of usability and lack of tooling support. So when we were talking earlier about near-term topics that we'd like to work on in CCG, that was one that stood out as very interesting. And I think that we were thinking, in fact, that it would be compelling to have that very soon, like as we start moving forward on the DID spec, closing out the verifiable credentials spec. So just getting that on everyone's radar, I want to make sure we don't lose track of that.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Kim. Okay, so is anyone on the call that actually go to IAW?
Yeah, I mean,
I know.
I went.
Yeah, go ahead. Whoever.
I think it's Dan. There's a lot of good stuff at IAW. A few of the conversations centered around like DID method scaling. That was one talk I did. There's other people that did go into some of the authentication pieces. We had one session based on something, and this is, I think, relevant to this group because it sort of goes with the DID stack a little bit, based on like context mapping documents for user agents. So there's this sort of need, as we've been trying to integrate multiple DID methods into user agent extensions and other things, that if you like FIDO or any disclosure or sort of like interaction you have between yourself handing a DID or doing something with a DID and an entity, if you don't keep the mapping of what occurred or like how you're enforcing that in a standard format, and that's just, it's beyond permissions to the data store, it's just like what the bounds are, it'll be kind of like silos, right? Because, you know, we in our UA will store like, hey, you've authenticated this DID with these five people, and we'll store that information in like a way, not intending to be proprietary, but some way. And if another user agent can't digest that, then you really can't use multiple user agents because they won't know. Like, it's almost like every you use a new browser every time, and it never knows and remembers your username or anything. You know what I mean? That's the sort of data that should be transportable. So I feel like it's another standard document that we kind of need, if that makes sense.
And, I don't know. I understand it very well. That's excellent.
Okay. But that was a big one. And then, yeah, it was everyone talked at IW about all of these things. It was probably over half of all sessions were on something BID related.
Cool. Heather?
Drummond just joined, so he could talk about it too.
Yeah, so I also was at IW, and there were lots of new people. First of all, it was like a huge event. They almost sold out. There was a lot of new people. Kalia and I did the intro to SSI, and there were like mostly new people there. Lots of sessions on DIDs and SSI, and there was a Sam brought this really cool guy who did like talked about VR and identity and brought his Magic Leap, and that was really cool. And I think that's something that's really interesting is that we are starting to see overlap between other communities and identity and what we're doing here. So I think the communication of what we're doing is really important. And that's what really I realized too, because I had done a talk about SSI at Money 2020 on the Sunday before IIW, which was to a bunch of like the banking and fintech space, is that we are doing a lot of really interesting stuff here, and we don't control the narrative. And here I'm going to really try not to get on my pedestal and broken horse, beat the dead horse. Sorry, I'm going to mix metaphors. Beat the dead horse that it's really important for us to support clear communication of what we're doing, why it's important to not just inside our community that we love everyone in or, you know, whatever, we're a community. But, you know, the banking and fintech space, they think they're going to solve this problem because they own identity and KYC. And that's kind of a egotistical attitude that I think doesn't serve anyone. So we need to get organized about taking the technical knowledge, expanding it beyond the, our internal space and our internal community and get the word out there. I mean, like, Kalia and I have tried doing that. The business model is, you know, problematic. But the information's there. I think we just need to figure out a way to support it. Finally, one of the things I really want to mention is the last day there was this really interesting session. I actually did not make it. I'm trying to get the link because I just uploaded an image. It was a session on the, what is it called? The like SSI stack. I just uploaded this to my Google Drive, just try to share it with you guys. I just found this really interesting. The stack, the conversation that was going on, I'd like to see more, more discussion on that. I'd like to see more notes on that. I unfortunately missed this session. It was the last one. But was anyone in this session? I think like Drummond was. Also there was another session that was really interesting too that was the myths of SSI. That was run by Timothy Ruff and Rovin Heck from UPort. So I thought that was a really interesting conversation. So there was a lot of, I can send a link to that session as well because I took a lot of notes. It was a great IIW.
Great. Thanks, Heather. So I want to wrap up and get a few minutes on our last item, but Jeff Orgel is on the call. So Jeff, what did you see at IIW?
Had a great time there. I agree. It was a really rich one. There were a few things I'll just touch on quickly. Sam did show up again with her buddy Liam. They brought a lot of really nice energy to the space, some sort of edge thinking, which was really valuable to myself. Phil's daughter made herself available for a session, Ask the Millennial, which was really interesting. she kind of took a break from the snack table and came over and gave a session. And so a lot of people got to ask, you know, about the value space there and how they perceive their identity. Drummond announced what had occurred for you all across the big water, and it was a rousing applause. You guys really got some great support from the community that was there, so that was really cool. Marcus accomplished something that was sort of a first-time thing, and I don't quite recall what it was, but it was pretty impactful, too. I think it had something to do with creating some element of logging into a data or recovering that. If someone else can speak to it better, I just know it was really impressive that that happened. And then the last thing I would say is, I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
Sorry, oh, I didn't know. Finish. I was going to say the thing that Mark said, but go ahead.
Right on, thank you. And the last thing I would say, there was a lady there, I forgot her name, did a really interesting job. She's sort of a futurist like Heather is, and she was talking about cyborg future, sort of really interesting. What would we all want when the cybernetic space becomes more real world to us all? Like, what are we looking for there? And then she said, okay, so if that's our goal, and we're at this starting point here in this room, you know, let's talk about the path to get there. So that was really interesting thought space. And I'll jump out. Good time.
Cool. Thanks, Jeff. So we're coming towards the end of our time today, so I want to take the last few minutes to introduce this conversation, and I think we'll need to spend some more time on the next call, although I'll talk with the chairs about, we haven't set our topic for next week. But despite all the great work we've done in terms of shaping the narrative, there was still a lot of confusion and even well-meant questions from devil advocates who really are our allies at TPAC, trying to help us distill what's the real message here, because a lot of our use cases for DIDs that we talk about don't resonate with them as, you know, the real reason DIDs are so useful and valuable. So I want to help us figure out, well, what is the canonical use case, the most important thing that DIDs do differently and better? And for some people, just saying it's decentralized isn't enough. You know, that's not sexy enough. And I think there's good reason for that. Why does decentralized help in specific use cases is sort of what we're looking for. There was also the thought that maybe it's something about the cryptography involved. But I think there are challenges in all of these, and we just haven't distilled down, I think, to a single unique selling proposition. And so I want to introduce that, and if there were folks at TPAC who want to help set this up, I see, Chris, you put yourself on the queue. Go ahead, Chris.
Thank you. So I was asked after TPAC to present to a couple of companies and then also at a meetup at Zurich that I did last night. And really tried in this presentation that I just sent the URL for to address some of the different things that people have raised. And I think it's definitely a better story, but it's not there. An important thing, we had a lot of people, you know, push back and go, well, self-sovereign identity, corporations don't care about it, governments don't care about it, you know, drop it. So I really kind of explicitly separated the two of them in this presentation. And, you know, it was interesting how, and also in some of my other discussions, I talked with a government-centric company while I was here in Switzerland and, you know, found that, like at TPAC, you know, explaining the value of decentralized identifiers without talking about self-sovereign identity was difficult. I mean, I have pieces of it in the second half of my presentation that I think could be better, but it still, I think, is missing some big things. So I think that's, you know, one of my early, you know, places I would really like to work on is, you know, separate from these other values of decentralized, you know, how do we persuade governments and corporations that, you know, that this decentralized technology makes sense for them and you know, without falling back on the I mean, I still value and I still think it is essential that we keep that message in some ways, but we need to be able to have it work even if the SSI message is absent. That's it.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. Heather?
Yeah, I had a real breakthrough kind of idea in this space around that question, Chris, based on some of the feedback I got at Money 2020. And, you know, like I mentioned in the readout for IIW, at Money 2020, most of the people there, they come from banking and fintech, and that's kind of, you know, a space I played in a lot about 5 or 6, 8 years ago. So I know a lot of the people who are pretty big in that space now, and they don't get decentralized identity, SSI, any of that stuff. Like, I've had lots of conversations with my friend Dave Birch, he's very open to a lot of new stuff, but, you know, he doesn't get it, and I have not been effective in communicating clearly to him these values myself. Now, the feedback I got from the short 15-minute presentation I did was, it was like, oh, this is an interesting way to do corporate identity. And so I think, you know, when we think about it for individual identity, which has a lot of value to us as individuals for privacy and security, you can also make an argument for in the cybersecurity and security space for increasing corporate security and changing the attack surface. But this whole idea of corporate identity is a really interesting thing. That was one of the comments. I was like, oh, I see how it could be used. So I think not limiting or expanding the use cases beyond individuals to multiple entities that need identity. And I was just going to leave it at that.
Cool. Thanks, Heather. Yeah, I think there's some real interesting stuff in the space that's not so much about – okay, Chris just jumped on. We're at the end of time, so I'll cut short my comment and let you go, Chris.
Oh, I just wanted to say one of the things that I discovered kind of by accident that is that my slide 22 about borders – resonated really well, maybe because it was here in Switzerland. And so it's almost like it was in the wrong part of the presentation. It was in the SSI section. But that's definitely something that keeps on coming back up in the decentralized thing is that, you know, everybody wants to own your identifier and everybody wants to have rules about it. But what are the borders and edges and all that kind of stuff are all under renegotiation right now. So, you know, I may have had that slide in effect in the wrong part of the presentation. So I'm, you know, thinking about borders is and the changes in borders and rules and everything is one other insight.
Cool. Thanks, Chris. The word that's been floating through a couple of the things that I've been bumping into is either interjurisdictionality or extraterritoriality, sort of the ambiguity of the spaces in between the DMZ of information systems. So with that thought, I want to talk about this more in future weeks, so I want to plant that seed, so take that as a homework assignment. And we are done for today. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thanks all. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Trevor. See yourself.